Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I
everyone, and thank you for joining us once again. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes Show. We are your green and gold gospel, your best source for year-round Rowdies coverage, coming at you live on Radio St. Pete Online and part of the Beautiful Game Network. We are presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Unfortunately for everybody listening, I'm riding solo tonight. It's the first day of school for a lot of people around the Bay Area. There's a lot of school shopping happening right now for supplies that teachers need, that kids need, and that knocked out Matt. And I think Dan's like out of the country or some, you know, jazz like that. Something like that. But anyways, I'm alone. So you're going to have to deal with me and my individual thoughts on everything that's happened this weekend and around the USL, because there's been some interesting developments around the USL. Some of them are, I don't know, it's going to get a little interesting out west. So here we go. Tonight, our Patreon executive producer, person we can't do this show without, David Colabo, thank you, as always, and thank you so much for being a longtime Patreon member. We always love chatting with you outside of the show, getting a chance to catch up and just shooting the breeze with you. Your appreciation for this show and the Patreon that you have had for a long time with us makes such a big deal, such a big difference. So thank you, as always. We'll mention it again at the end of the show, but Patreon is the best way to support what we do here because it helps pay for the subscriptions, it helps pay for equipment replacement, every now and then equipment upgrade when needed. So we definitely appreciate that with all of our patrons. If you want to tweet, well, in this case, it's me, during the show tonight, at Unused Subs Pod on Twitter is the mothership account. I'm on it tonight, so, you know, you're going to be dealing with me. It is what it is. In some ways, I guess it just sucks to be you. I don't know why that's funny. All right. You know what is funny? What's funny is the fact that Detroit thought that they could come into Al Lang, play this like open formation, this open field 3-4-3, match the Rowdies stride for stride. And they thought that that would get them a result. And like the fools they are, the Rowdies sufficiently told them no. They looked them in the face, they pointed their finger, and they said, no. In another classic Rowdies match against teams that try and play an open, aggressive field, the Tampa Bay Rowdies absolutely dominated every facet of the game again. I mean, when you're a team that hasn't lost in like almost, what, 3.5 months, this is kind of becoming the norm. Basically, at this point, it is. Let's be real. The Rowdies had 63% possession on the night. I think they're still taking corner kicks. Had 15 of them in total. And that ended up culminating with a walloping 29 shots taken. Of the 29, 8 of them make it on target. Now, that being said, 14 of them go down as being blocked. That's one reason why the corner kick number is so high. So, essentially, 22 of the shots make it more or less on frame. We only missed, really, 7 times. I'll take that. I'll take that all day. That is an absolutely dominating performance against a very putrid 6 shots with 2 shots on goal from Detroit. And it's funny because of those shots and shots on goal, like, realistically, the one that was arguably most threatening was the one at the very end of the game. A little bit of a frantic moment there in the dying minutes, and Detroit, I'm not going to say they had a chance at it, but, well, you know, they gave it their best. Rowdy's pretty much had a lineup that's pretty standard for what we've seen. Not much in the way of major changes. There was one substitution early in the first, well, I'll call it early, but in the first half in general. 34th minute, Jan Ekra looks like he may have, like, pulled something, strained something, you know, that type of deal. They went ahead and subbed him out for Nicky Law. Pretty much Rowdies didn't miss a beat. Everything was going well before. It went well afterwards. Life is good. You know, it's an interesting game in the sense that watching the way that the Rowdies dictated the game, you never really felt threatened by this team in Detroit City, who we were talking about last week. You know, they've been able to create a roster and create a play style that competes at this level for the first year that they've been in a fully professional league. And so that means that they're in a playoff spot. I think you can make an argument that Detroit City, you know, playing the Tampa Bay Rowdies to a 1-0 defeat on the road is actually a great result in the context of them being a first year fully pro, you know, 34 game season type of squad. That's a great result for them in the context of what this season is for them. It may be disappointing in the sense of what they may want to accomplish this year in whatever hopes that they might have, you know, being in a playoff spot and maybe trying to fight for a home, you know, a home seed location. You know, in the sense of what they're trying to fight for this year in general, that's a great result. And they shouldn't be ashamed of it. They shouldn't be frustrated by that at all. This team is certainly one you got to watch in the future. Like, Detroit next year could be frightening if they have their coach, if they keep a core number of players, they could be a very good team next year. Like, that's not something I'm going to say about, like, a team like Charleston or Hartford. Like, Detroit legitimately has the pieces to be a contender going forward. They've struggled to score goals this year at times, at least multiple goals. But their defense has been very solid. Their goalkeeper, Steinwasher, has been fantastic. We talked about him a lot on the Twitch pregame show. you know, that he was going to be a force. It was going to be an open game with a lot of shots, but that goalkeepers were going to be a big difference in the way the match was going to get played. Turns out that turned out pretty accurate, though. Like, I'll admit I got it wrong in the sense that I thought a shutout would be unlikely. I was figuring 2-1. But, you know, I mean, look, 1-0. Tampa Bay Rowdies get another shutout. I'm not going to complain. I mean, if that's going to be the worst that I get for being wrong, I'll take being wrong all day. Now, we did have a sub at halftime. Jake LaCava came out. Deion Harris came in. There was a bit of a shuffling of players at that point. Things got a little harder to track. We don't make another substitution until Lucky M. Cassana comes in the 77th minute for Dos Santos. Of course, Dos Santos himself scored that goal on a follow-up from a long-range shot from Lewis Hilton. So, first of all, thank you, Hilton, for taking long-range shots. Secondly, thank you, Dos Santos, for playing heads-up. Just everybody was caught sleeping. The keeper decided not to catch it and decided to spill it like into the middle of the box, essentially. It's kind of an odd decision on his part. Dos Santos was there to clean it up. Guinzotti gets subbed on in the 87th minute of the game and earns his 150th appearance for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Major, major congratulations to Sebastian Guinzotti on that mark for the night. He is, I believe if I'm remembering this correctly, in the modern era, I think he has the second most appearances. I'm pretty sure. I think if I am pulling this completely from memory, so let's just, I'm doing this off the hip right here. I think Georgi Ristov is somewhere right around like 180 appearances overall, like 170, 180, I think. Guinzotti's at like 150. If memory serves, like Frankie Sanfilippo, I think, is at like 120. Yamada's at like 110. I think Fernandez might be upwards of like 115 at this point, 120, something like that. I'm shooting from the hip there. I think Savage ended his time with right around that like 115 mark, maybe. Yamada's, I think, at 120. I don't remember if I remember mentioned him yet. Yeah, so I mean, you start to get an idea that, you know, Guinzotti in the modern era is like legitimately in a class of his own when it comes to the most important players we've had here. Still looking for those goals this year. That has to be, again, we mentioned it, that has to be frustrating. He's still looking for those. We hope he's going to get them. I know that everybody in the fan base is hoping he can break the Rowdies' all-time scoring record that Georgi Ristov set a couple years ago. But, you know, you hope that he will get over that hump, get a couple of shots. I mean, he's got so much talent. You expect something's eventually going to go his way. You got to imagine. But exciting match. It's always good to be at Outlang. Always good to see all of you guys. It's always good to have a fun time where it's not raining during the game. It's actually kind of funny. We've actually been pretty lucky about that last couple seasons, not raining during matches here at Outlang, causing weather delays, things like that. Hopefully that trend stays up. The one slightly weird interruption to the festivities of the weekend, though, was that Lawrence White did get another yellow card in the match. We're pretty sure, if memory is serving a little bit, we're pretty sure that means he might have to sit out this upcoming match against Louisville, which kind of stinks. The team is deep enough in talent that I cannot imagine that that is going to be a major issue. Not when you've got Castellanos that just came back. Not when you've got Venkayazil. Not necessarily available, but he's present. And maybe available for the upcoming weekend. You know, we've gotten some depth again at defense. That Wyke by himself isn't necessarily a major hiccup. But, you know, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. It was interesting this weekend, though, that essentially speaking, the way that the team played, Lawrence Wyke played up the field pretty heavily, the way we were pressing against Detroit. And Aaron Guillen essentially played as a midfielder in this match. And for long stretches of the game, we basically played two at the back with Antley and with Scarlett. Super aggressive style. Super aggressive style. I appreciate the change of pace and trying to really go at it. I don't know if we have the finishing, the reliable open field finishing to do that against, like, say, some of the best teams in the league. Maybe this was just something to, like, hey, let's see if we can't throw them for a loop and really press hard, press high, and see if we can't catch Detroit off balance a little bit. I mean, it's definitely a possibility there. But yeah, in the attack, we almost played with like two in the back, with Guillen and Wyke pressing up the field pretty heavily. So it was interesting to see how that kind of manifested in the way that the game was played. I think it'll be as equally as interesting to see if essentially the Rowdies play that way against, say, a Louisville City. You know, you'd think offhand, there's no way, but, you know, maybe it's a change of style. Maybe it's a change of aggressiveness to have Guillen up, like, pushing up the field a little bit further than normal. Who knows? Who knows? And it's something to definitely keep an eye on, at least, especially towards the end of the season. Like, you know, we've mentioned it a lot about how the end of the year you have a lot of like easy games in a row to go into the playoffs. And it would kind of make you wonder if, like, to keep the tempo up, if the Rowdies would go to a system like that and play that aggressively to end the year. I think that's certainly something to consider, as something to look out for. Don't know if you're going to see it again during this stretch, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. I think once again, Nicky Law is showing how valuable of an addition he has been to this team, and what that addition is going to mean going forward. He is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Another 91% completion percentage for accuracy. He had two shots. Create an additional chance above that. 3 of 4 on his tackling attempts. Had 3 additional recoveries. That passing number has been phenomenal for him. You know, Lewis Hilton, typically a little bit more conservative in the types of passes he's making during the game. For obvious reasons, he usually plays a little bit further back. So most of his passing is more or less side to side. But that man, again, 70 of 79 passing. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So, Good game. Rowdy's won nothing. Another victory. Life is good. Life is sweet. It was 90s night for those that maybe you knew, maybe you didn't. Had some fun music playing over the overhead. It was a great time. It was a great evening for some soccer. Loved every minute of it. You know what else is a great time? Taco Bus. Proudly delivering a healthy, fresh, and authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostado, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. Visit us today at one of our 11 locations, and remember to keep it chido. So, a couple of news points for the Tampa Bay Rowdies here. First of all, we broke the news yesterday on socials. We did get it confirmed that Ian Antley has been extended for the rest of the season. His 25-day contract has gone out for the rest of the year. So, you know, we were talking earlier about having Castellanos available, having, you know, potentially a Van Kaziel in play, you know, depending on what his injury status is. I think he was like kind of a game-to-game situation at the moment. You know, the Wyke, as important as Wyke has been, and he's absolutely been a rock-solid player for this club at the moment, you know, you've got Nicky Law, you've got Lewis Hilton, you've got Scarlett and Guillen, you've got Antley healthy. You know, it's interesting because you start to kind of look at the scenarios of, you know, what the team looks like when they're fully healthy, and does Wyke even see the field when you're fully healthy? That's going to be something that's going to be interesting to look at. You know, we saw Aramin in a boot. You know, he's in a boot walking on crutches. That was an injury he sustained a couple weeks ago. You know, that's one reason why Guillen was playing up. You know, I'm kind of a surprise of a big proponent for having like Dalgard playing on the left side and having a guy like Deion Harris starting the match on the right hand side instead. It'd be interesting to see how Neil plays that against Louisville specifically this weekend. I mean, obviously, like I said, like we just discussed, you know, Guillen basically was a midfielder this week. So it was kind of interesting to see how that, you know, is that something you can get away with against a Detroit rather than a Louisville? Probably. But, I mean, we'll have to see how that shifts around. You know, players coming back from injuries will change those equations, certainly. But congratulations to Ian Antley. You know, Neil is a big proponent of guys earning themselves a roster spot, earning themselves time on the field. So, you know, Ian coming back from an injury, with especially the injury type of injury that he was enduring, he's been training with the club for a long time. Obviously, he didn't really get any minutes on his little 25-day cycle. But if Neil's willing to have him on the roster, you know that he's doing well in practices. He's know he's doing well in training. And he's certainly giving it all he can. Neil's going to reward that. So congratulations to Ian. I'm happy for him that he gets to spend the rest of the year with his brother down here officially and get himself a paycheck at the same time from the same job. It's always fun that you can do that with a sibling. So good for him. That's great. It's good news. It's good. I love having Rowdy's family expand like that. That's awesome. What's also awesome is that announced today is that Neil Collins is the coach of the month, to basically nobody's surprise. Undefeated again. Rowdies have just been on a storm everywhere they go. Totally not surprising. So, congratulations to Neil. Had a lot of accolades over the last several weeks with players and things, so it's nice to see Neil get some recognition of his own this time around. He's certainly more than deserving for it. I mean, at this point, I think if you were to have, like, assistant coaches of the year type awards, I'm pretty sure the Rowdies would probably dominate that category, too. Let's be real about that. But it's always awesome to see Neil get the recognition he deserves. I mean, let's put it this way. If the season ended today, Neil's going to be one of the top coaches of the year candidates. You know, I mean, I think you could make an argument, like, from the East. If you had to pick four coaches from the East for coach of the year, I would think your four candidates, I mean, they'd have to be what? Louisville, Tampa Bay, and Memphis, right? You know, Memphis has had a good year. Louisville's always dominant. The Rowdies are always dominant. And then I'd probably say Detroit City because, you know, let's be real. They've been able to punch above their weight a little bit. Or at least they've been more stable than a lot of expansion clubs usually are. Like, that would be my four from the East that I would think would be most eligible. You know, Neil's going to be in that conversation by the end of the year. We're just going to see, basically, you know, when you're already a top team, when you're already a top team for several years in a row, it's difficult to be recognized as, like, a coach of the year. Because, like, everybody's gotten so used to you being good. Like, how do you give the award over and over to the same person type of deal? So, like, in his case, like, getting nominated is basically the nod. Because, like, you got to give respect to people that are, like, in tougher situations with bigger roster turnover. Somebody like a Detroit City coach. You know, that's going to be, I think, where it is. And more than likely, let's face it, like, it's probably going to go out west somewhere anyways for that award. There's a lot of teams that are very close to making the playoff line out west that really, if, like, you know, Monterey Bay is riding an undefeated streak right now. If they keep that up, they're only 7 points out of a playoff spot. That would be a remarkable achievement. If Monterey Bay can storm through, you know, the second half of their year and earn a playoff spot, you'd make an argument that that would probably be worthy of Coach of the Year award, you know? So it's tough. It's tough on a guy like Neil to get the award, but if you can be nominated for it by the end of the year, oh, yeah, that's a chef's kiss moment. The major news around the league. Speaking of talking about things happening out west. Is Orange County. Now, Orange County, obviously, they're having a tough year on the field in terms of results. Because they won the championship against the Rowdies last year. Boo. And then basically sold all of their players that were, like, basically if anybody was willing to offer them some money, they just sold their players. Good for them. They made some money. The news came out about, like, 5 days ago, maybe 6 days ago. One of the local podcasts out west for Orange County made a, like, basically kind of announced. They were like, you know, we thought it was oddly suspicious that Orange County had not really made a, they hadn't really talked to us about extending the use agreement for the stadium that they play at. Championship Stadium or something like that. Publicly owned facility. Yeah, Championship Soccer Stadium is officially the name. And it their current use agreement expires in November. And the story went, the story as it was presented at the time, was Orange County was trying to negotiate an extension to that. You know, I believe the NISA team, Cal United Strikers, also plays at the same facility. but nobody cares about Nisa, so like they haven't been brought up in this conversation basically at all. Nisa, why haven't you collapsed yet and just saved ourselves the pyramid step? Thank you. But after many, many months of kind of supposedly going dark, all of a sudden, like an item hit the agenda to talk about yesterday, Tuesday night, August 9th, at the council meeting. Suddenly, they were going to be talking about the use agreement in a very public setting. And there were multiple bids for what the potential use agreements would look like. One of them coming from a Los Angeles Galaxy for the potentially exclusive rights to the stadium for LA Galaxy 2. Now, this is interesting because, first of all, like, nobody cares about LA Galaxy 2. Nobody's watching those games. So if you're creating an exclusive agreement, you're essentially saying that you're okay with never having spectators in the building basically ever again. Because, you know, Orange County and Cal United, for what it's worth, they have a decent following. I mean, it ain't the Tampa Bay Rowdies, but they have a decent fan base. It's a USL-level fan base, right? Certainly more than the, like, zero people that go and watch LA Galaxy 2. Specifically. And it raised a lot of eyebrows because, obviously, you know, booting out Orange County in August of 2022, essentially speaking, really limits the opportunities you can have for finding a Division II eligible stadium for the 2023 season. And so it's like, this is a very panicking kind of moment for the club based on the news report that came out where it's like, oh crap, like, could we really get kicked out of the building we've called home? So, you know, the supporters groups, the club, everybody throws up their arms in the air. Raise as much awareness as you can. Let's flood the email inboxes. Let's really make this a thing. And eventually what ends up happening is there's an update to the schedule for the meeting. Supposedly the item was dropped from being like a like an actual part of the discussion where they would discuss two different deals. The LA Galaxy 2 part was supposedly, or at least that part of the discussion was stripped. The LA Galaxy, AEG, the ownership group, just put out a statement. They were like, we're not interested in this. Well, that was a lie. I mean, I'm willing to say it. I called it out on my own personal Twitter feed, but like, essentially that was a lie. We had it in writing that they were proposing an exclusive use agreement. So like, for them to say, we're not interested, no, you were interested. Like, I don't know if it was necessarily your idea or not. Like, Mike Pendleton had thrown out the possibility that maybe this was just an ambitious council member who decided to come up with this idea on their own and invited the LA Galaxy and said, hey, what if we, would you be interested in having this stadium? Yes or no? Yes. Oh, well, what if we did this as a proposal, and LA Galaxy went, I mean, sure, you could throw it up for a vote. Why not? You know, and basically they just kind of walked backwards into the proposal. Hypothetically, that is an option of what happened, in which case that would make the LA Galaxy statement accurate. We were technically never really interested in this. That was before the meeting. Then the meeting happens, and the city manager, well, okay, let me set this up the right way. A city council member went ahead and asked the city manager, like, hey, there's a lot of heated discussion here. There's a lot of opinions being thrown. A lot of people scared of things. However, he's like, there's more to this story. Would you mind explaining a bit more background to this? And the city manager, oh my goodness. Now, I'm not saying he's lying or that he's wrong or that he's malicious. I've seen the accusations. I don't know if they're necessarily accurate or not. But this is essentially like a summary of what he said. Was, first of all, no, we have not been quiet about this. We've been in conversations with Orange County Soccer Club for a long time about the use agreement. They knew the LA Galaxy were interested. And I can prove it because there's potential litigation about all of this already, like, in existence. There's strongly worded legal letters that have been going back and forth between the organizations, between MLS and USL. Potentially, I'm assuming about this, but maybe bigger than that. He, like, really kind of, like, some people were like he was really aggressive. I watched it. I actually thought, I didn't really think it was necessarily malicious. But he kind of poked some holes in the idea that this whole thing was a surprise. And he did kind of clarify, he was like, we were not voting on the use agreement tonight. Like, that was never actually ever written in the agenda for the evening. It was only ever supposed to be a discussion. A public discussion, moments for public comment for what these things might look like. Again, I'm not saying he's right or wrong. This is just essentially what he's saying, weighted against what was said in the public, you know, in the Twitterverse, as it were. And knowing how USL clubs operate, knowing that, you know, these organizations tend to be smaller, and they tend to be run by people who, for better or worse, are sometimes a little, I'm not going to call them shady, even though that certainly exists. Cough, Andrew Haynes, cough. But they're certainly run by people that are not what you would consider, like, the most amazingly professional people on the planet. It would not shock me at all if either Orange County is intentionally misleading the situation around for their own benefit, or were really that ignorant of everything happening around them when they could have known. I think it's going to be interesting to see in the coming days and weeks as more questions get asked about what's going on for that stadium and the city council and whose idea was it and when. And I think that's going to be interesting to see. And then also to find out what this lawsuit is, this supposed piece of litigation, as the city manager said. Is it specifically Orange County related? You know, one of the things that we've seen is the fact that, again, LA Galaxy 2 is going to be moving to MLS Next Pro next season. MLS Next Pro and USL are in an open fight for all future expansion clubs, basically going forward. Is their litigation between the leagues in relation to MLS Next Pro, or is it specifically about the Orange County situation? Was the city manager even necessarily speaking accurately in relation to what that was, or is it like, is he mischaracterizing, you know, what was happening there? Maybe it was litigation between Orange County and LA Galaxy because of the use agreement situation, but he was just throwing the names of the leagues in there just because. I don't know. We're going to find out. That's going to be something that comes around in the future. The litigation itself apparently isn't necessarily well known, so we don't know the details of that at the moment. But through the whispers out there, one name did come up on our Twitter feeds that we haven't seen a lot of lately, that we've been all kind of sitting around nervously waiting for the news of their return and what that would look like, and that was Jacksonville Armada. Apparently, there's some pretty strong possibilities, rumors, if it's not already signed at this point, that Jacksonville may end up going MLS Next Pro. That is apparently a legitimate possibility. I just want to state for my own self on the record how much that would suck. I hate that. I really hate that. First of all, nobody watches MLS Next Pro. I'm sorry. Like, no one cares. There's only one independent in the league team in the league this year. It's going to be the only independent team in the league next year, unless anything changes between now and kickoff next season. And nobody watches that team either. I mean, again, I'm paraphrasing. There's probably like 1,000 people a game, if that. Whatever. I'm just going to paraphrase it. Nobody watches it. That would, you know, we already know that, what is it, Huntsville, I believe, is going MLS Next Pro or something like that. Or I don't remember what league it was that they were going. But, like, you know, there's a lot of, the way the metrics work for what qualifies as a legitimate metro area for a USL championship team and for what qualifies for a League One team, the map around the country is kind of getting full. You know, we've talked about this for a couple of years now, and these organizations are all kind of fighting and competing against each other right now. You know, and we know that MLS kind of vowed, we're not going to poach, you know, any of your existing clubs to switch leagues. But that doesn't mean you're not going to put a team in their area to compete directly against them. It doesn't mean you're not going to try and undermine them whenever you get the opportunity. It doesn't mean you're not going to compete for future spots. And essentially, MLS has done exactly what we all thought they would do, which is everything I just said. Poaching, undermining, competing. And again, you can make a philosophical argument that all of this has to do with the fact that we just don't have a very strong federation to just basically tell the leagues what they can and can't do. Which has been, you know, if you really want to look at it, a weak federation in the professional soccer realm in the United States, or should I say a very unauthoritative federation when it comes to professional soccer in the States. That's kind of just a historical tradition now, isn't it? Whether that's, you know, post-World War II, whether that's the NASL era, you know, the Rowdies of old were not allowed to play in the Open Cup because of discrepancies in all of how the federation was recognizing the teams and all that. NASL was excluded from the Open Cup back in the day. They weren't allowed to participate. There was no efforts at really making, you know, various tiers of teams and trying to create stable environments for these clubs to have certain thresholds and things. It was a free-for-all. NASL falls apart late 80s, early 90s, and it's basically still a free-for-all. You know, USL and its like pre-USL days existed. And admittedly, some of this was the federation kind of sitting on their hands. You had the 94 World Cup. They were kind of getting things together to get, you know, MLS launched in 96. That took a few years. Sure, we'll give them that a little bit. But, man, historically speaking, if you want to look at one of the only, like, individual years or even individual moments where the Federation has actually been authoritative, you could make an argument was 2010. When they forced the breakaway USL clubs and the retained USL clubs and forced them all to play together in that season because nobody could get themselves figured out, you know, for the actual league structures that they wanted to play in, because all of that stuff with you know, the formation and the infancy of the NASL idea, you know, all of that. That's one of the few times the Federation actually did what they really should have done. And then it's funny because the very next year, what happens? NASL becomes an independent league. And then because of, you know, a bunch of insert legal jargon here, they were still excluded from the Open Cup. You know, I mean, think about that, right? The Federation allowed... This is quite the tangent. The Federation allowed these leagues that didn't have enough teams and organization to exist independently. They forced them to play together in one league. And then in the following year, once the leagues actually got themselves figured out, they still ended up excluding one of them. It's like, what? So... You know, you're looking at the MLS Next Pro situation, you're looking at the Orange County situation, and just repeatedly, it's the same insanity over and over. The Federation just sits by and lets it all happen. In the words of Mitchell, what the hell? So... we'll have to see what happens. We'll have to see how Orange County shakes out. You know, you hope that they're not going to get kicked out of their own stadium, but you know for a fact there's more to that story. So don't jump to conclusions too harshly in the midterm. I think there's the use agreement expires in November. You're going to hear a lot about this story over the next two to three months. And probably a lot about lower division soccer in the next couple months as a whole. I got a feeling that there's more to this and it's going to get bigger. And the different battles are going to get bigger and more frequent. So buckle up. It's going to be a fun time. All right, bringing it back a little bit. A couple of run fire things here we want to do. A couple of notable results around the USL this past weekend. Couple things that if you weren't paying attention to the league were kind of important overall. Miami went out west and smacked New Mexico. 3-0 was the result of that score. That's a big deal. New Mexico is a top four team out west. Miami, of course, on the flip side is barely, you know, well, not I want to say barely, that's They're above the playoff line, but they're on the playoff line, right? I mean, they're comfortably there, but they're still on it. That's a big deal. It's obviously we're going to be, everybody's going to be looking at all these different bellwethers of between East and West leading into the playoffs and what that championship game is going to look like. That's a fascinating result. 3-0. Former rowdy Kyle Murphy, I think he had another goal this weekend. You know, that's a heck of a result. Kind of an eye-opening one, if you want to say it that way. Also happening out west were the other two games completely. Orange County, bottom of the league, managed to tie Colorado Springs, who's towards the top of the West, 3-3. That was a heck of a shootout if you didn't see the highlights to that match. San Diego played basically what's going to be a fascinating, like, playoff-level match against San Antonio. It would not surprise me to see those two teams duking it out for, like, the Western Conference title. San Diego destroyed San Antonio 3-0. That is a huge noteworthy match. Because it'll be interesting to see if that kind of opens up a trend of San Antonio getting some negative results. You know, they got a draw and a loss in the last two games. Is this the start of the end of San Antonio's run? I don't know. We're going to find out. Notable matches upcoming in the around the league. Colorado Springs is playing El Paso. That's two top-of-the-table teams out west, so that's certainly worth your time. In the Eastern Conference, there is a huge matchup between Pittsburgh and Memphis. Team number three versus team number four. Memphis, obviously, actually, realistically, both of these teams are trying to catch the Rowdies for a number two seed, potentially, but they're both, you know, still trying to fight for seeding in terms of just seeding in general, right? Because top four is going to be a home spot anyways. Pittsburgh's trying to cement their spot as the number four team. You know, that's just going to be a big bellwether match for playoff potentials and what that looks like anyways. Birmingham is hosting San Diego. Yes, the San Diego that just beat San Antonio out west is now going to Birmingham. Birmingham sitting currently fifth in the East, fighting to get into the home playoff spots. That's a big deal for them. That could be a huge confidence boost for them if they can get a victory against a team like San Diego. If San Diego wins again, maybe they're on a stretch where they'll be the team to beat out west. Be interesting to see how that plays. Conference standings as it stands right now for the East, Louisville's again and still in first place by a point with a game in hand. That hasn't changed. The Rowdies are in second. We know. Memphis is currently game in hand, 3 points behind the Rowdies in third place. Pittsburgh, even number of games, 5 points behind. Birmingham's currently in fifth, 41 points. They're seven behind the Rowdies, equal on games played. Detroit, this is where things start to separate a little bit. Detroit is 6 points behind Birmingham in sixth place. They have one game in hand there. Miami is a point behind Detroit, 34 points. And then below the playoff line, it goes from 34 points to 25 points. Equal number of games played, FC Tulsa. I think it's safe to say we know who our top seven is. Indy and Tulsa both have been struggling to have any kind of consistency or form. I think it's pretty safe to say we know who the top seven in the East are going to be at the end of the year. All right. Wrapping up the show a little bit here, because we're gonna do something here. Best of the Bay. Creatives Loafing's kind of like community-driven best of popularity poll. The Rowdies obviously are in there for being the, you know, top professional team or whatever, top sports team. We also have made it past the first round. We had enough nominating votes to get to the top 10 and this round of voting. So please, absolutely, give us a shout on there and vote for us for Best of the Bay. You know, there's some questions about, like, Dan, this might be the last year Dan's a part of the podcast and things like that. Like, let's really make this something special this year. Let's really go for this thing. Let's see if we can't surprise a few local podcasts, a couple radio shows here locally. Let's make a run at this, shall we, Rowdy's family? Let's have some fun with it. Also up for Best of the Bay and making the final a final notice is that Laura Spencer is up for Best Mural of the Year, Best Local Mural. So there are three Rowdies affiliated Rowdy fans, you know, that kind of thing. We'll be putting up the links for all three categories and how to vote for them up on socials going forward until the vote tally ends. Give us some support. Give everybody some support. Let's really make some noise in this year's Best of the Bay. I think that would be exciting. And it would be fun, you know, just because the podcast is potentially changing this year anyways, with Dan potentially moving away and things like that. Let's really make this something special. So definitely get some votes in for all three of us. It would make everybody's day for sure. So let's spread some love around the Rowdies family. The Tampa Bay Rowdies are in Louisville this week. There are going to be some Rowdies fans that are going to be traveling up there. I don't think I'm going, but I would love to. Louisville has announced that they have officially sold or distributed 12,000 tickets for this matchup. So, you know, unlike their midweek, mid-soccer showcase with, you know, coincided with the mid-season USL meeting, this is really, like, the game of the year. You know, Rowdies, Louisville, I hate to say it, everybody, the Western Conference doesn't matter. Louisville, Tampa Bay, at this point, is the, like, Liverpool, Manchester United, realistically. I mean, this is the matchup. Yes, I just made that comparison. Yes, you can deal with it. This is going to be huge. I think the conservative bet for final score predictions, I'm just going to say draw 1-1. But this thing is a complete coin flip. I don't think you're going to see... I actually think that the Rowdies... I think Neil Collins will go with four in the back. That's my guess. On the road, major opponent. It's what he did a couple weeks ago against Pittsburgh. I think he's going to go four in the back. That's my prediction with a 1-1 draw. And honestly, that'd be a great result. I'd be totally cool with it. So, good on the Rowdies. Let's go. Let's get this. Let's at least grab a point. That would be fantastic. All right. With that, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you to Wolfface for the amazing intro music, to Radio St. Pete Online for giving us this platform to do the show live, to Corrigan's and Shamrock for giving us an opportunity every now and then to do a live show on location at your establishments. We love the support that you guys give to us. If you are listening to the show, please share it, subscribe it to it with whatever platform you're on. Give us a rating. Give us a review. It helps get us in front of other people that may be interested in what we got to say. If you want to take the support a step further, Patreon is the number one place. For as little as a dollar a month, you can help support us and the cost that we have for running this little operation of ours, subscriptions and the equipment and everything. Big, big deal. Once again, thank you to David Klabo for being a longtime patron at the executive producer level. We appreciate your support. Thank you to Taco Bus for being an official sponsor of the show. We always appreciate having that partnership with you. And thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier for USL, MLS, and US Soccer. Get your scarves at roughneckscarves.com. All right. It was a solo show. It was hard to do. Thank God it's over. I'm kidding. It was a blast. Guys, we love you. We appreciate everybody that was listening. If you want to tweet us your thoughts, if you want to tweet some comments, if you want to tweet some banter, 100%. Twitter's open for all three of us, or you could do the mothership directly. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what you're talking about. We love interacting with all you guys. Go Rowdies this weekend, and we'll see you all next week. Have a good one. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, they kick the ball around. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, and then they fall on the ground. Oh, the Rowdies, the Rowdies, the Rowdies are a kick in the grass.